The federal government is going to make it harder to get the disability support pension. The number of new people going onto the pension is expected to fall by 40% when new impairment tables are introduced on January the 1st. Instead, these people will receive unemployment benefits, the Newstart allowance, which pays about $100 a week less for a single adult than the disability support pension. The stated intention is not just to save the government money, but to get more people into work. But according to a leading welfare agency, Australia's current job services network is just not equipped to deliver the kind of support needed. Tony Nicholson is Executive Director of the Brotherhood of St Lawrence. Tony Nicholson, welcome to The National Interest.
Hello, Peter.
Do you support the aim of getting more people off the disability support pension and into jobs?
Yes, I do, essentially because that's what people want. The way in which the vast majority of Australians build a good life for themselves and their families is through paid employment. So they don't aspire to be on either a disability support pension or an unemployment benefit. So whatever we can do to assist them get a good foothold in the world of work is good policy.
And do you think these new disability impairment tables that the government is bringing in, are they going to achieve that aim?
Well, in part it will. I think it's important for us to understand the broader context for this policy. We've had a period of pretty much up until the global financial crisis, unprecedented prosperity, which saw most of us sharing that prosperity, but significant numbers of people have been left behind, not sharing in it. So we've got to ask ourselves, why is this the case? And I think it's because the economic reforms that drove that prosperity that most enjoyed brought great opportunities for people, but for the more disadvantaged in our community, it also brought great risk for them. And that's largely because of the premium it places on education and skills. So people who don't have the prerequisite skills, that don't have work experience, that don't have the networks into the world of work, are now easily left behind.
And that explains why, despite the fact that we've had rapid economic growth, steady economic growth with some ups and downs, but consistent economic growth, let's put it that way, and the fact that we have employers saying they can't find the workers they need, we have the government warning of a skills shortage, yet we still have 500,000 Australians unemployed. We still have 100,000 Australians unemployed for more than 12 months.
And we have about another 800,000 Australians who can't get enough of work, don't get enough hours per week to satisfy their needs.
Who want to work more.
They want to work more. So that all adds up to a labour force underutilisation rate of 11 or 12%.
So one in 10 people whose skills or energy or time isn't being fully utilised.
That's right. And it's essentially because they don't have enough skill, they don't have the work experience to be able to take their place in the opportunities that are available to them in the modern dynamic economy. So the idea of requiring people or making it more difficult for people to get on a disability support pension need not be a bad thing. If we provide them with commensurate skills, if we provide them with the training, the work experience that they need to be able to take their place in the workforce, because after all, that's what they aspire to.
Well, we have a job services network, which aims to help people who are unemployed get into jobs. Is that working?
It is for some people. So if we look at it by international standards, it performs very well for those people who are unemployed for relatively short periods of time, who don't have large barriers to getting into work.
So you mean if I lose my job tomorrow, it might help me find another one?
Yeah, dealing with what we used to call a cyclical unemployment, now we're really dealing with structural unemployment. So the people that are being left behind have serious barriers to participation in the labour market. And by international standards, that's where it performs pretty poorly.
So when you talk about serious barriers, what do you mean? I mean, we're not just talking about people with disabilities, presumably.
No, it could be a whole range of things, ranging from people that have really never had much of a chance in the labour market because they missed out on education when they were young. It might be for people that have been out of the labour market for extended periods at times for either caring responsibilities or they may have had illness. It may be people that have, for example, had a mental illness. It may be people that have very poor English, literacy, numeracy skills, etc. But essentially, if you've been out of the labour market for a long time, it's very, very hard to get back in. So what we need to ensure is that these people have the capacities to be able to participate. And that means we've got to put a lot more effort and a lot more investment into preparing them for the labour market.
And our current systems don't do that.
No, they don't do it well enough. So it's not just about requiring more investment, because we do require that additional investment. Australia's got a fairly poor record in terms of its investment in active labour market programs compared with the high-performing countries in the OECD.
Well, what's the comparison?
Well, compared to the top, say, five or six countries in the OECD, Australia only spends about a quarter of what they spend on active labour market programs. So it needs more investment. Thankfully, in the last budget, there has been marginal improvements in that. But it's also about how that investment is spent. And I think the time has come where we've got to encourage employers to become much more active in the preparation of the disadvantaged for the world of work, to bring them much more closely into the process. Now, there is opportunities, of course, in the reality that the pool of people of workforce age in proportion to the total population is in decline with our ageing population. And inevitably, if the Australian economy continues to grow even at modest rates, you're going to find labour shortages starting to emerge again. So employers will be interested in looking at different ways in sourcing labour.
They have an interest in getting more people working.
That's right.
This is The National Interest on ABC Radio National. I'm speaking to Tony Nicholson, Executive Director of the Brotherhood of St Lawrence. Now, Tony Nicholson, the Brotherhood, I think, has been trialling some more intensive assistance programs together with business to get these disadvantaged people back into jobs. What have you been doing?
Well, essentially, we've been working closely with some major employers. So, for example, I'll cite the ANZ Bank. Over the last 3 years, we've been piloting a project with the ANZ Bank where the bank offers some of our long-term unemployed clients that we've been working with up to 10 weeks paid work experience. That's a big commitment from an organisation to take on people in paid work experience. But the outcomes are dramatic. 80% of these people have gone on and got permanent jobs within the bank. So the close collaboration between an organisation like the Brotherhood of St Lawrence and a big corporation like the ANZ Bank is showing, in small numbers at this stage, that you can get very, very productive outcomes for the highly disadvantaged people. And it really breaks down the stereotypes that frustrate me no end, where we have, on the one hand, economists saying, well, we think this large numbers of people left out of the workforce is sort of a natural phenomenon. And on the other hand, some of the people, my colleagues in the welfare sector, that more or less say that what we really think is that these people aren't up to scratch in the modern economy and we should try to create some sort of national welfare shelter for them. So
you have two points of view there. You have the one point of view that these people are unemployable, and the other point, well, I suppose both people think that, and their welfare response is to say, let's just shelter them. But I wonder, I mean, your project, your trial, as you say, has been small scale. Isn't there it's been very successful, but isn't there a danger of this being self-selecting, as it were? If you're going to have a small scale trial, you're going to start with people who are perhaps the most eager, the most likely to succeed.
Well, we've actually gone about it quite the opposite. We've taken people that have been the longest unemployed and had the greatest difficulty in getting any foothold in work. So, for example, they're relatively young people who have never really had any success in work. We've taken another cohort of people who have been refugees, where they have been 4 years after a settlement in Australia are still unemployed. So we've started at the more difficult end, and we've demonstrated through collaborations with companies such as the ANZ, such as Woolworths, GrowCon, and in some of the local government, the city of Yarra, for example. So these are still small scale, but they do demonstrate that, firstly, the highly disadvantaged want to work, they want to have a decent job. Secondly, that you can successfully build their capacities to work, but it is highly reliant upon the business community looking at the problem of sourcing their labour in a different way.
Well, I presume it's also pretty resource intensive, because if someone's got a basic literacy or numeracy problem, then before they can work in a place like a bank, they're going to have to essentially go back to school, aren't they?
There's all that. The critical thing is that people have a line of sight from where their current circumstances are to a decent job, because that's what builds motivation. And that's what motivates people to then to undertake acquiring the skills that they need, whether that's basic numeracy and literacy, or whether that's just really a prolonged period of work experience so that they get the generic work skills associated with taking direction from a supervisor, understanding occupational health and safety, etc.
What would it take to scale up the kind of trials you've been doing at a national level? Because I presume you need to look at all the associated problems. Could be mental health problems, could be homelessness. There's a whole stack of problems that individuals may have that limit their ability to work.
Well, I think the first challenge is to understand that there are opportunities now for people. We have an economy that is going to be facing labour shortages. So not only do we have the moral imperative to assist these people getting to work, but there's also an economic imperative now. And secondly, I think to ensure that employers understand that this is an opportunity for them as well in this context where they're going to be casting around looking to find how they find labour. Because one of the big challenges is that if we continue to leave large numbers behind, we're not going to get the community support for the levels of immigration that the economy is going to be needing. So not unreasonably, a lot of folk in the community will ask, well, why are we bringing people into the country when so many people are still struggling without work or not getting enough hours?
Tony Nicholson, thank you.
Thank you, Bert.
Tony Nicholson is Executive Director of the Brotherhood of St Lawrence, and you'll find a link to the Brotherhood's vision for getting more people into jobs on the National Interest website at abc.net.au/rn/national interest, where you can give us your comments on what you've heard. Or you can call the feedback line 1300 936 222.